You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Got Crosby right in front of the net. Good block shot by Greenway there as he dropped down to get a piece of that one. Carlson, far post, scores. Sidney Crosby. Textbook Penguins power play goal, and they win it in overtime, 6-5.
Good morning, everybody. Dan Dunleavy, Rob Ray on the call last night. There is the overtime winner as Pittsburgh takes down the Sabres 6-5. Very exciting game if you had zero rooting interest in it. We're going to get to football today. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
To be fair, it was exciting. Like,
I was in hell
for
half that game.
Okay, yeah. The second period was terrible.
The second period was awful, and they chased the entire third period. And then when they took the lead...
Right, that part was really
exciting. They fell apart. The moment they went up 5-4, they fell apart.
But the first period, like, I turned on that game and then went into my kitchen. Like, I was, like, doing some dishes or something. And I heard the announcers, like, kind of, like, get loud. And, of course, it's in Pittsburgh. So if the Sabres scored, I wasn't going to hear a goal horn or anything. And I heard them, like yelling. And be like, oh my God, what happened? Like they literally were like, what? How did that goal go in? And I was like, what? And I came out and I was like, oh my God, Tage, sweet.
Sweet, that's awesome.
And then I went back in the kitchen to finish the dishes and then they scored again. And it's like, wait a minute, what's happening? Like, where did this team come from? And it was great. Like that, and of course they get scored on a few minutes later, but then they scored again and it's 3-1. And it's like, okay, this was the problem that you had last year. You were going into games, starting off hot, and then flaming out and falling apart. And by the end of the first period, they were that's the story of last season. But this last night's game, it was, all right, you played a great first period. Now go out and do the second, and boom, there it is. That's where you fall apart, the second period.
Yep.
But then you make up for it a little bit. You come back in the third. You actually take the lead a minute apart from two goals.
40 seconds. You scored two goals in 40 seconds.
That was perfect. It was great. All you had to do was hold on.
They looked...
It was incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, they looked both equally impressive and the exact bad team you think they are. Josh, they're 0 for 15 on power plays.
That is
and not terrible. Even necessarily to the fact of their 0-15. They're an active detriment to their team when they go on a power play. It is 2 minutes where you get no scoring chances. Mm-hmm. It's 2 minutes where the opposing team is more threatening and they're a man down.
Yeah.
They are horrendous on the special team. Their penalty kill, I like for the most part.
I was going to say, coincidentally, their penalty kill actually is better than the power play.
Last night they gave up two goals. But for the most part, I really like their penalty kill.
Pittsburgh's always had a great power play system, partially because of the fact that
really,
Sidney Crosby.
Really, that's last year.
Yeah, and just because Sidney Crosby is there pretty much. But like, I look at everything that they had going into this, you know, talking about the power play and how it's revamped and changed and everything. And a part of me looking at the season as a whole looks at that shortened training camp and the trip to Europe as, you know what, they had to get home, they got their legs under them now, and they're doing okay. Because for the most part, they are. And I was trying to think maybe that's the same thing that has to do with the power play. Maybe it was just, you know, hey, they just got to get the rust off. They had that weird training camp and the weird trip to Europe. They'll get there. But they're not.
Yeah, they're not.
It's not getting any better. It's getting worse.
Paul, we spoke with Paul Hamilton yesterday and, like, you know, joking, but kind of right. Well, at least they're actually able to get into the opposing team's zone.
Right.
Which was true.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah, because last year that was just impossible. It was, if you asked, would you rather skate around the neutral zone or skate it into the opposing end? And they would skate it around the neutral zone. And it's just, I don't really know what they can do to fix that because it's mind-boggling. I don't understand what happened to any sort of power play system they had.
I don't think they had one. I think that's a big part of it. I don't think they had one. I think their power play system from 2 years ago was
get Tage the
no one knows who Tage Thompson is.
Mm-hmm. And you can still use Tage as that one-time wonder. Just don't make it the focal point of your power play, but also don't get rid of it entirely.
But it's just they look so discombobulated. The moment they're up a man, they look discombobulated. They don't know what to do. They don't know where they're going. Paul brought up yesterday, too, you're not getting anything out of the guys on the blue line with Dahlin or Power as your quarterbacks of the power play. They're not shooting the puck. Yeah. So there's no fear there. All of the fear is still Tage Thompson or, you know, Paterka if he gets put on the power play more often. I think he should. You're also not getting anything out of Dylan Cousins and Jack Quinn. If anything, you're getting negatives. I think they're both from yesterday, like minus three, key turnovers, also ruining power plays by just not knowing when to pass it, taking it across the blue line. It's just they look at times completely lost. And it's when they have a man advantage, and that is the most stunning part. I'm not asking you to have a top five power play. That's, I think now at this point, being greedy.
Yeah.
Just can you get just in the be top middle 20? Of the pack? Yeah.
Top 20 maybe? First score a goal.
Just be yeah.
Well, that would be the key.
But that's my thing. I think, you know, we're what, through five games?
Yes.
I'm at a point now, I mean, you're 0 for 15. I'm wondering just how few power play goals you're going to score. Mm-hmm. How bad is this going to get? You only had one shot at last night, so, you know, fair. I mean, if you had five shots like Pittsburgh, maybe we're singing a different tune here. Probably not. But you're going up against Columbus tonight, and I saw the moral victories for tonight from Jeremy. Score power play goal.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I will go streaking if that happens. Honestly, I've gotten to that point. They are a detriment to themselves when they get a – they should decline them. Change the rules. They should decline them.
Quinn, Cousins, and Benson were all minus two last night.
Benson, I'm a big fan of. That
I don't think that's any, you know – indicator of and plus minus.
I don't even want to say I'm a fan because I'm worried that I'm going to build him up like I did Dylan Cousins. He's going to take one injury, and man, like what has happened to Cousins?
Right.
He's like two years ago. There was a belief that like man, like that's a core foundational member of a team that is ascending. You would be lucky to get anything from a trade from him.
He appeared
the contract
to
is
be,
bad, and he himself is a bad player.
He appeared to be this great defensive forward that can maybe get you. You know, 50 points, 60 points, but he's
25
gonna,
plus.
But he's
going to
make up for it in his defensive end. He's not going to get as much points as like Tage Thompson would, but he's going to make up for it in his defensive end. But that has completely disappeared. He was part of the reason why they got scored on once last night.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lazy pass along the half wall that leads to, I think, the shorthanded goal on the power play, no less. So that's the other thing that's just ridiculous about it. And I hate saying all this negative stuff because it was a good game. They played well for all of the first and most of the third. Like, I don't think they had that bad of a third period. They scored two goals in 40 seconds. They came back after giving up three unanswered goals, which usually this team in the past has given up two or even just one goal and is just, oh, well, I don't know what to do. I guess we're just going to turtle up and try again next game. This time, you can see them actually come out of their shell and no, you know what? We're going to go out there and we're going to tie this game. And then you know what? We're going to take the lead off the faceoff on the next play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that was great to see. But leading up to that third period, it was terrible. That second period was abysmal.
Oh, horrendous.
You had no puck control. You had no semblance of just any type of, you know, defensive zone setup. Partially because there was like 10 penalties in the second period by both teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, oh, it's the refs' fault or let's blame the refs. But at the same time, there were some very questionable calls.
Great. Yeah,
throughout
it was
that
not
game.
Great.
There was a clear
offside.
Yes, that one wasn't very clear, but it definitely was offside.
Mm-hmm.
But Thompson's penalty in overtime along that wall.
Yep.
That same thing happened in regulation 20 seconds before the Penguins tied it. But to the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
A Sabres player was tripped along the wall. It wasn't called. And like I said, 20 seconds later, boom, the puck's in the back of the net and it's a tie game. You're going to overtime. It's the inconsistencies in that department that are so hard to look at, especially in a game like this. But it was not because of those inconsistencies from the refs that caused the Sabres to lose this game. Sure, it was a bit of it. But it was not the reason. The reason why is because they could not control the puck for almost half the game.
Yeah.
Because the third period didn't start off great. It finished fantastic in terms of, you know,
but most of the third period, goals. You were just looking at it going, cool, they're gonna let this slip away. They let a two-goal lead slip away in the second, and now here we go.
Yeah, and like I said, I was happy with the third in terms of, you know, being able to just come back, mm-hmm. but it wasn't perfect. The first was perfect. You were up 3-1. You chased a goalie out after five shots. And unfortunately, the goalie that comes in just plays like Dominik Hasek for the rest of the game.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you shoot it straight at his chest every single time you have a breakaway.
That's fair. But he did have some pretty decent
he did. But like, this is where Paul brings up, like, why do they just make average goaltenders look like Dominik Hasek every mm-hmm. now and then?
Yeah.
I don't know. Either hit the net
right.
for a start.
To be
or
fair,
when they do actually put a shot on net, it's straight at the goalie's chest. Josh, they had three breakaways last night. Four. Well, three of the four straight at the goalie's.
No, there
chest.
Were four that were there were four that they didn't score on. The fifth one was technically Peterka's second goal.
Oh yeah.
Like there were four they didn't score on, but there were five total.
And he comes out at that angle. And, yeah, that's right.
So I don't look at that goal as a breakaway personally, but it was kind of a breakaway.
But in terms of like you created a turnover, you're going down the ice.
Right.
It's straight at the goalie's chest. He's not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
He just stands there, And because they've had a few of these chances this year, because their penalty kill has been at times very aggressive and very good. It's these lazy, I'm going to deke once and then just softly lay it over to their blocker side, and they're just going to like just leg sweep it.
Yep.
There's no real effort there.
You're not selling the goaltender.
No.
You're not doing a hard body feint.
It feels like if it's not Tage Thompson going down for a breakaway, they have no hope. Because at least for him, he fires it like at the speed of a rocket so that even if it's at the goaltender's chest, he can't really see it.
Mm.
So he might move. It's just, what do they have? I mean, it got worse as the night went on, but TNT put up a stat too. They've had 97 missed shots. It's the most in the NHL.
Yeah. I mean, but
it was 4.5 games.
Yeah. I don't know how many actually missed the net last night. That's one thing I really wasn't paying attention to. Partially because they scored three goals in like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at, you know, all of the things around the NHL that are happening, like with certain teams. And there's teams that you expect to be bad that aren't bad. And there's teams you expect to be good that aren't good. Like the Avalanche started off, are 0-4 right now.
Mm.
Are they having these conversations? Probably not.
Are they 0-4? I thought they were 0-3. Did they?
No, they lost last
night.
They lost last night to Boston.
Yeah.
Are they having these conversations right now? Probably not, because they have Nathan McKinnon. They have Mikko Rantanen. They have Kale McCarr.
But I think it's another thing is you kind of know you're a good team. You're going to figure it out.
Right.
The Sabres, and this is why, it's game five. There should not be a rant. My voice should not be like this.
No.
It's more along the lines of you've earned, though, this vitriol. You've earned people's having zero faith in you after a single loss on a Wednesday night. And they scored five goals.
Yeah.
Now, on that point, though, you scored five full-strength goals. You need to win that game.
Is any of this panic... I don't know if I want to call it panic, but is any of this worry of season's over, it's done, we're going to be out by October, is that all kind of because the Bills were in the same situation like a week ago where they were on a two-game losing streak and the offense looked broken? Like, is it just kind of bleeding into each other a little bit?
I think for the Bills, though, I mean, even we took some calls too, there was never like this real sense of panic of they're going to miss the playoffs. It was like, yeah, they're not as good as maybe we were hoping, but like they'll be fine.
Okay. I don't know. I had that thought this morning and I was just kind of like, you know, are we getting a little too overexcited about things in terms of, you know, it's the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that where we're going to with this? But I didn't think so, but I just wanted to see how you were feeling about that. Because, like, I remember a couple of years ago when the Sabres were making their push, there was a lot of people, you know, tuning into the games and that hadn't tuned in for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was, you know, the Sabres lost two games in a row, and it was like, oh, they're out of it. They're actually not. They're fine.
They're
25 more games to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered if it was partially that or if it was more so just because of, you know, how bleak it does look. But in reality, aside from the power play, the 5-on-5 numbers are fantastic.
They're top 10 in the league, I think, in most of the 5-on-5 categories.
In most of the offense. And
which is insane because they can't hit the net.
Right.
That's
which is crazy.
The insane part.
But where they're shooting from is what's giving them these good numbers in terms of the deep stats. But in terms of even just the normal, like looking at the NHL site stats, it's their top 15, top 10 sometimes in some of these offensive categories, and that's great. I want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you were hoping for. But you're still seeing there's problems with consistency. There's problems with the power play, obviously. But mm-hmm. the power play being bad should not kill your season. I understand that good teams have good power plays, but at the same time, if you can just the best power plays in the NHL are usually like 25%.
No, absolutely. You know, I think the difference is, though, and maybe this is just how I would define it, their power play is not bad. I do see it as a detriment.
Right.
It is something that is going to sink their season because when they go on the power play, they hurt themselves.
It kills momentum
for 2 minutes. Through 15 tries they've had at this,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be aggressive here, but like it feels like they've had like 4 scoring chances through 15 power plays.
Yeah.
For
that's
2 minutes.
30 minutes of ice time.
Yeah. For 2 minutes, they are a non-offensive threat. And if anything, you're more scared. I mean, you saw it last night of them turning the puck over and giving up a shorthanded goal more than you're excited that we're on a power play. Here we go. Like, this is where we take advantage. Every time they've gotten a power play since like Prague, I'm like, oh, what's going to happen now? Because it's no different. Matt Ellis is not the power play coach anymore, and it feels like nothing has changed.
He's still an assistant coach.
But I think he's like up in the press
box
like now
the
or
video.
Like that.
He's like in the video department kind of thing. But and honestly, too, you could have told me they could have got scored on like 4 or 5 times when on the power play. They only got 1 shorthanded goal against the team last night.
Yeah,
it feels like there should be like 7.
Because man, they turned the puck over a lot.
Yeah, and I wonder too. I wish there was a way to track this, but I don't think there is. How many times were they scored on within like 30 seconds after the power play ended?
That's something I know a lot of people have wanted to know, is either like how many goals are scored right after a power play ends, or for a shorthanded kind of. But I don't know if anyone actually does anything, because I don't know if anyone knows, like,
because that Kings game.
How long should the numbers be? Like 10 seconds? That kind of feels like a full.
Like think about that Kings game. Oh, actually, that was a power play goal for the Kings. Yeah. It wasn't a shorthanded goal. But still, there was a guy coming out of the box, and the Kings score right after. It's like, oh, well, that's not a power play goal. Or no, it was, because it was 5-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. Sorry.
Yep.
Invalidated point. But my my overall point is it's not that I don't want them to fix the power play, but it's like, you know,
I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do, because you just have to get it from the point of being, you're creating scoring chances against yourself to, hey, we're getting 1 goal every 5 attempts, which isn't great, but hey, at least we're getting something.
It might also, you
just have to get to the floor. You're in the basement right now in terms of power play.
Yeah.
It's not even like passable as something that's like, you know, oh, it's got to get improved, but it's not killing us.
It might be something, too. We'll get to your calls here in just 1 second. It might be something, too, like the actual scoring for this season,
mm-hmm.
where eventually the goals are – they maybe just got to break the dam. Like, they went through 3 straight games of just 1 goal each. Yep. Now, these last 2 games, 5-5.
Yep.
Like,
which is,
I mean, they're
good.
They're,
keep it going.
They're now scoring.
You're playing Columbus against a backup goaltender.
Yeah. But, like, with that, I could at least look at the 5-on-5 and go, I mean, they're getting shots on. Like, okay, like, they're not going in. I can't say that with the power play.
No, because they're not getting shots on net.
They're barely getting it into the opposing team's zones. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Mark's been on hold here for a little bit. Mark, you're on the show. What's going on, man?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for having me on. Correct me if I'm wrong, that Matt Ellis was the power play kind of coach last year.
Yes.
Why in the world did we keep him on board? I mean, it's clearly not working. I mean, I don't mind moving on from an assistant coach. I mean, I think it's pretty ridiculous. But on the coaching, kind of pivoting towards football, I feel like it's been Josh Allen versus 2 opponents, not only the opposing defenses, but his own football coach. I mean, what was that at halftime? They get by with a win, and, you know, it kind of covers up. He kind of masks another Sean McDermott brutal decision. So that's my only concern going into the back half of the home stretch here. I'm going to have to listen. Thanks, boys.
Thanks for the call, Mark. On Ellis, me and Josh were saying, he's still an assistant coach. I'm almost positive he is not in charge of the power play anymore.
Yeah, no one really knows, like, what.
But it sounds like he's more like in the video.
None of us really know
scenes.
What he's doing. Obviously, the Sabres know what he's doing. But it was just more of a behind-the-scenes type of coaching role.
Yeah.
And it could be a behind-the-scenes part of the power play. We don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be. And
if
that's the case, that's a decision.
Yep. That's a decision.
Also, I looked at the wrong stat in terms of they have had 5 power play goals against.
Oh, they have. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was looking at shorthanded. I was thinking like in like the other team. It was the goals they've given up while shorthanded.
Okay.
So they've given up 5 goals while on the power play.
And then on the McDermott point, real quick, we are going to transition for a little bit to football. Sal Capaccio is going to join the show here in about 10 minutes. I get it. I understand. McDermott, I said it on Monday night. I'm about done with the constant same mistakes over and over and over again. It did feel like, though, with the Hail Mary, they were playing it correct, and Rodgers checked into the Hail Mary call. I don't know how true that is. I saw it on Twitter real quick, and it was like, okay, that makes sense. I mean, he's been in this league forever, but I won't lie and say that I'm not like sick of the same mistakes over and over and over again. I will say, and this is kind of, you know, I want to reiterate the point, I think it is a tough topic to talk about because I don't find it realistic that they will move off of him. I think it would take a truly horrendous season to even have that conversation and potentially even seasons to see him get fired. I think he's built up that kind of goodwill with ownership. I'd even, you know, to his defense, he's winning playoff games where, you know, some of these other coaches, I know he's been compared to like Marvin Lewis. Lewis didn't. And he keeps winning playoff games. You can argue, though, that it's to Josh Allen's credit, and I really won't fight you on it, but that is something that owners look at, and it is something that he gets done where other coaches with great quarterbacks haven't been able to do or even make the playoffs. I mean, look at Peyton Manning's, much of his beginning of his career. He went through, I think, 3 coaches because that was a team that was very up and down in terms of their overall success. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Mike on the line. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
Good, thank you. I guess we have to talk about Cousins, which is probably the play of the game and why the Sabres lost. I mean, he's messing around with the puck right there, right inside of the blue line right there. It gets dripped from him, and then they turn around and have a 2-on-1 and go down and score. And he just cannot be your second-line center. They have to find a solution, and that brings me to my second point, is management. When does ownership in this town finally have to, you know, when does, you know, somebody have to speak up and say, hey, maybe it's Pegula, and them not willing to spend the money? I just, you know, from what I understand, they had cap room, a bunch of cap room this year, and that brings me back to, what was it, 2 years ago at the free agent deadline when they know they needed a goalie and they didn't go out and try and get anybody. And I guess sooner or later management has to take responsibility for the reason this team is the way they are right now. They didn't replace, I guess, the guy that went to Edmonton, I forget his name, from last year. They ate his contract, I guess. They didn't have a replacement for him.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. In terms of management, I do want to say this real quick. I am of the belief, and I could be very wrong, no one wants to come here. You are historically one of the worst franchises in professional hockey. And a lot of players have come here that are star players that have some of their worst seasons. Taylor Hall is the guy that immediately comes to mind for me. Yeah. I think you have got to build up goodwill back with the NHL as a whole. Stop hiring rookie head coaches. To be fair, if this goes poorly with Adams and he is shown the door, stop hiring rookie GMs. You've got to get some credibility back. I do think that was a major factor in bringing Lindy back, both credibility with the fan base and the NHL. You kind of do need to win with this group. But on Dylan Cousins' point,
yeah. I have a jarring stat for you here, Zach.
Good. You're going to kill me with one of my favorite players from a few years ago.
I know.
This one hurts.
So the Sabres have a few very clear shooters on their team, right? Mm-hmm. The leader in shots on goal throughout the entire Sabres roster right now is Dylan Cousins with 19 shots on net. And he has no goals and not even an assist. Not even a...
Nope.
He shoots it, it bounces off somebody, and somebody finishes it, and he kind of gets credit for an assist on that. No, nothing. He has 19 shots on net and nothing to show for
it. His only noticeable stat is he is -5.
Yeah, noticeable.
His confidence is shot. I mean, there is no confidence.
He also
he doesn't hit. He's not as aggressive. That was a big reason why, like, I fell in love with him as a player. I made the joke when we were first getting on air, you know, some years ago. He was a guy that would fight a polar bear to defend his teammate. Mm-hmm. I remember the Winter Classic, but when they were up in up in Canada against
the Heritage
Toronto,
game.
The Heritage game up in Toronto. He's sitting next to Terry Pegula slamming on the glass
because he got kicked out
with 2 minutes left. I mean, losing his mind. And I'm like, that's my guy. He's 20 years old and he's a crazy person and he's big and he's got that scoring touch. He was a playmaker. It felt like 2 years ago, it felt like he is going to be the perfect second center because, like you brought up, like he may not be the Tage Thompson that's going to maybe score 100 points, but if he's going to be a 50 to 60 point guy, 25 goal scorer, and just a grinded out dude, a pain in the you know what to play against, beautiful. That is all gone. None of it is there. He can't shoot. He's missing that, I think, more than anybody. Every scoring chance.
That's the one thing it doesn't show me. It shows me shots, but it is shots on goal. So I would assume.
And the stats will not prove this. I'm 100%, but I don't care. He hits the post more than anybody else on the Sabres too.
Yeah.
I mean, his confidence is shot in every aspect of his game, and it is hard to watch. And now yesterday you saw. I mean, you've seen it for most of this year. The turnovers. I mean, the actively just ending plays. I mean, 2 years ago. The kid line was one of the most dangerous lines in hockey, not just for the Sabres. Him, Jack Quinn, and J.J. Paterka looked amazing. Right now, through five games of this year, I get it, it's early. Paterka looks like the only one that is even somewhat ascended.
He
is ascended.
He's but great. Quinn looks, J.J. Paterka is probably their best forward.
I think he's their best forward by a mile.
Yeah.
I think he offers more than anybody else.
He has that shot that has kind of come out of nowhere, but of the two of Quinn and Paterka, you expected Quinn to have the better shot.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen anything from Quinn, but at the same time, he's on a line with Cousins, so how much of that is due to the fact that Cousins can't provide any offense?
I also wonder, though, his skating is rough.
Yeah.
Chaddy Dominguez has brought it up yesterday, but like his skating is not good.
Mm. And that's tough to see.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, two ankle injuries back-to-back like the way he had them.
And you do wonder.
Yeah.
You do wonder.
Right.
Let's hit one more phone call before our first time out. DJ, on the line. DJ, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. Good. Thank you so much for bringing up the missed shots. I feel like a crazy person watching these games with Dylan Cousins.
That's how I feel.
And frickin' Tage Thompson missing by a mile. We lose so much offensive possession because they miss the net and it goes flying around the boards and out of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
We get no garbage goals because they never hit the net. Like, just hit the goalie, it would be better because you at least get a shot at a rebound. It's just the most frustrating thing in the world how these guys, it feels like the last year and a half, have just missed the net by a mile. And then two, on Dylan Cousins, I mean, we've already given him the contract. It's 7 years, a long contract. If moving him out of center, you know, into a wing doesn't work, I mean, are we just eating that? Like, is there no way to get out of that or trade? Or, I mean, dump him for anything?
I mean, I don't know if you could trade it. I don't think any team would really want to take that on, given what they've seen from him recently. I mean, I don't know any team that would want that contract.
I think that's
that
the big
player.
Problem. Yeah.
If I mean, obviously, if he starts turning around, you're not going to talk about trading him. But if he starts turning around, people might take interest. But you know, at this point, no team in the NHL will want that contract or that player. Like as he's performing, it's not going where it needs to go with him. And I hope it turns around because like you were saying, he was one of the most fun players to watch in terms of he's physical and he's got offense. And you know what? That's something the Sabres haven't had in a while, and it's great to see. But you know, maybe moving him to wing will help. But
we're gonna find out.
I don't know if they're gonna do that.
I think they're gonna have to. 803-0550, the number to call. You want to get your thoughts in on the Sabres. Of course, we'll love to listen to that. We're gonna transition though to football here coming up next as Sal Capaccio joins the show. Big day, very busy day over at One Bills Drive yesterday. We'll get his thoughts on everything that went down after this quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims.
Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Zucker plays it back to the point. Byram feeds a short pass from McLeod, top of the near circle. Shot scores! Welcome to Buffalo, Ryan McLeod. He's given the Sabres a 5-4 lead with 9:04 to go here in the third period. The Sabres have come roaring back in Pittsburgh.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. Ryan McLeod, one of my favorite additions the Sabres have made this offseason. He's been fantastic. Scores his first goal last night. And as you heard there, put him up 5-4. Two very quick goals. Paterka with a beauty. And then McLeod there, slap shot nearly from the point. Fun game last night at times, but man, it became very, very frustrating as well. We do have some Bills breaking news, and we're going to bring in our own Sal Capaccio here on the Western Hotline to help us break it down. But Sal, the Bills have brought in a kicker.
Yeah, they have, guys. We're just learning this a couple minutes ago, as you said. Let me kind of go over the details here. The Bills have signed kicker Lucas Havrisik to the practice squad. They've released wide receiver Amarian Brown, and Havrisik is a player that's been in the league a little bit here. I'm just trying to get the information on him. You guys might have it more in front of you than I actually have because this is just coming in as I'm kind of getting all situated to talk to you. So here we go. Lucas Havrisik, he's with the Rams. I don't really know too much about him. Originally entered the NFL to the Colts practice squad in 2022, spent time with the Browns and the Rams over the last couple of seasons.
You could probably argue that it's maybe good we don't know a ton about a kicker.
Right.
Because the more you know, it probably gets a little bit uglier.
Yeah, you know, that's probably right. I mean, he did appear in 9 games for the Rams in 2023 after being signed off the Browns practice squad in October. All right, so obviously this is a Tyler Bass situation, right? That's what is happening here. Lucas Havrisik, you know, joins the Bills, and we all knew that over the last few weeks, you know, Tyler Bass, even though they're a firm commitment to him and saying, you know, how much they believe in him, that things had been really inconsistent and have been trending towards them taking a look around. Well, yesterday they brought some kickers in for a workout. Brandon Bean confirmed that was the case. Obviously, Havrisik would be, you know, somebody that they had taken a look at either yesterday or recently. And Brandon Bean yesterday had some very, I think, truthful words about Tyler Bass and his situation. And he said that they had spoken to Tyler Bass about the fact that they were going to be doing this and that, you know, it just hasn't been good enough, the production. And obviously, they signed him to an extension. And there's, you know, money that you have to think about here and what that situation is. But as I've said all along, I wouldn't expect the Bills just to outright sign a guy and cut Tyler Bass. If there's a guy out there that's not on a team, there's a reason he's not on a team. And are you just coming in and trusting him to make kicks more than Tyler Bass? I mean, I guess you could say you trust anybody, but I don't think that's the case. So to me, this was always the move and what I'd been saying, which is you bring someone in on the practice squad, you get them up to speed on what your operation is, and then maybe you last another week here at home with Tyler Bass, see if he can figure things out with someone pushing him. We'll see where it goes from here, though, guys.
Is this going to be a thing, Sal, do you think that, like, because as you brought up with the contract, too, that even if, let's say, you know, Havrisik becomes the guy, that they ultimately have two kickers on the team and Bass is just effectively benched because they can't really cut him with the contract? Or could they actually kind of work their way out of that if ultimately Havrisik does become the starting kicker?
I mean, you never say never. I mean, you can do it. It just would be a lot of dead money. I mean, you could do it. It's not like you have to pay extra on the contract. It's just that you're then have a kicker that counts money on the salary cap that you've given him guaranteed money that now you have to account for. And it's a dead salary cap. What you also can do is elevate him. If you remember, you get two elevations. And honestly, the Bills are trending towards being healthier this week, right? Which is maybe then that leaves space for, okay, we're going to elevate this guy because, but then what happens? Are you elevating him to actually kick the ball? And if that's the case, that's really interesting. Yes, you could have two kickers. It's not ideal. I don't think the Bills want to have two kickers. That's why this guy's in the practice squad right now, and then, you know, we'll see where it goes.
And then you did bring up Brandon Bean spoke yesterday. It was a very busy day at One Bills Drive. Also heard from Amari Cooper, just, you know, just kind of to, you know, blanket question. But what was your really big takeaway from yesterday? We heard from McDermott, Bean, Cooper, Josh Allen also spoke. We got our first injury report from yesterday, although it was a walkthrough. Very busy day yesterday.
Yeah, let's start with Sean McDermott. You know, Sean was very focused on making sure that there wasn't too high of expectations for Amari coming in right away. He even said he wasn't sure if he's going to play this week. I think that was just kind of tempering a lot of things. He kept saying, you know, it's about the team, not about one player. I think he just wanted to kind of, you know, make sure that that's how he sent his messaging. Then we heard from Brandon Bean. He was very committed to still saying how much he believes in this wide receiver group. It wasn't about them. It was about adding a player of this caliber. But we all have seen the lack of production from the wide receivers, the lack of separation from the wide receivers, and that manifesting itself to everything being a little bit more of a struggle lately for the offense, obviously. Bean also gave a lot of insight into how the deal went down, what the timing was. He said Davante Adams' trade did not just speed them up and pivot to Amari Cooper, but it kind of closed the door on it, which then they went all in with their chips on Amari Cooper when they'd already been there. He said that really, as of Sunday night into Monday, and then Monday afternoon specifically, they were in a good spot where they felt this was going to happen. Now, do the math on that. Sunday, the Browns lost to the Eagles to drop to 5-1, right? So you think about the Browns from their standpoint. It's not a surprise that they probably looked at themselves and said, okay, we're 1-5. I'm sorry, 1-5, not 5-1. They look at themselves and go, we're 5-1. I did it again. We're 1-5. And, you know, this season we have to start evaluating what we are now versus what we have and what we are in the future. So I think it made it much easier for them to trade this player who maybe they didn't want to trade before that, right? You can't force someone to trade you a player just because it looks like, you know, he'd be a good fit for you. And then financially, obviously, it made a lot of sense for the Bills to grab a player like this, where you're only paying him $800,000 for the rest of the year, not only cash, but on your salary cap, versus someone like Davante Adams, where Bean basically gave an indication they were monitoring that, they were watching that, but it became clear that wasn't going to happen from the Bills' standpoint, so that's why they, you know, went to Amari Cooper. And then from Cooper's standpoint, he drove to Buffalo after he heard the news, or he was told. It was a 3-hour or so drive, give or take. He said it was basically like the first day of school, a long drive before the first day of school, a lot to think about. And he believes that he can contribute this week. He said it's uncharted territory for him to have to go to a new team and in 5 days go out there and play. But he thinks he can learn enough of the playbook because he's a smart guy to be able to go out there and contribute.
So, Sal, it's kind of interesting. Like you were saying, Bean said that the Adams trade didn't really speed anything up. So I'm sitting here kind of wondering, did they have both of these trades kind of like at like an even pace of in sort of like this, all right, we're talking to both, let's try to get both to the finish line here and see which one goes first? Because like this is the second trade deadline in a row where we've heard them talking to two different teams about the same kind of player. Last year it was eventually they get Rasul Douglas, but we heard talks of going for Jalen Johnson in Chicago. And it's like, you know, I just think that's kind of interesting to look into the.
Well, we don't know, Josh. We don't know level of talks they actually had with the Raiders.
Right, but it's at the same time, it is kind of like, you know, it's interesting to just hear that didn't really impact anything that much. And I'm curious if, you know, if Cooper was the idea all along, or if it was, you know, just kind of an even thing and just see where things were at. I understand where you're coming from. Like, we don't know where they were at in terms of the level, but at the same time, I'm glad to see that it didn't really impact what was actually happening. I was worried that, you know, the Cooper thing was like, oh, panic button. The Adams is gone, and now we got to get somebody. You know, like I'm glad to see it was maybe sort of the plan all along. We don't know for sure, but it could have been.
I'd be confident in saying that I don't think that they were counting on a trade for Davante Adams. You know what I mean? This wasn't. Oh my God, what are we going to do now again? I don't think that they went so far down with the Raiders. He said they were monitoring that situation. It doesn't even mean they had a trade in place, a framework, or anything like that. It was probably had some conversations, see where it's going. But look, I think the reporting on the Davante Adams situation for a while has been that they weren't gonna eat the money. So I think the Bills, once you know that, that, you know, you're kind of out of it. But, you know, you see where it goes. Maybe at some point the Raiders say, okay, well, we want to make a deal here with somebody. What do you want to do? So, no, I don't get the sense. I think they knew for a while that Cooper was very much in their sights. I think they, you know, had been monitoring that. I think you go back a while. Brandon Bean said it's his pro personnel staff's job to kind of see all these things and to, you know, talk about players as the whole season's going on. It's also, it's funny he said the trade deadline. It's not the trade deadline yet. There's still 3 weeks before that, guys.
It just, it's weird because, like, it feels like it is because those two big trades and then all of a sudden it's like, it's quiet.
Well, I say that because Brandon Bean made it clear that, like, they might not be done. If there's something out there that fits for them, they'll go and, you know, make that deal. But it's got to fit financially. It's got to be the right fit for the player. And, you know, getting Amari Cooper in now before the trade deadline allows him a few extra weeks as opposed to Rasul Douglas last year coming in and in November. And now it's a few extra weeks to learn the playbook and get up to speed. But, you know, just going back to your original question, I don't think there's anything that suggests that, oh, my God, we're so invested in Davante Adams and now we have to go to Amari Cooper. This was a guy that they had been talking about. They had been in contact with Cleveland. They were monitoring the Raiders situation. And sure, you never know. But you have to, Josh, keep it open. Like, what if the Raiders just call him one day and go, yeah, Davante doesn't want to play with Aaron Rodgers. We're going to eat a lot of money. So you have to keep that open.
Right. Sal, last thing here, just real quick on the injury report. Again, was a walkthrough yesterday, but notable that Kincaid actually popped up yesterday, limited with a collarbone injury. Did you see anything on Monday night that necessarily would kind of point to, like, all right, that's where it was? I think I remember Kincaid kind of getting up a little bit weird, but I can't remember for sure.
I did. I remember there was a play. It would have been on the far sideline, the Jets sideline. It was going left to right if you're watching on television. I remember him catching a ball, going down, and when he got up, I thought for a minute he kind of, like, looked and maybe grabbed his shoulder. Not grabbed it, but kind of, like, put his hand on it, right? Like, in his shoulder area. So that made sense. I watched him. He came off the field. He never went to the trainers, never went into the medical tent, but I did notice it. So, hey, look, Sean McDermott said when we talked to him on Tuesday, we asked him about any injuries in the game, and he said nothing significant, minor bumps and bruises along the way. So I'm going to just take it at that for right now, and the fact that he was limited, the fact that he finished the game, the fact that there was no official injury report on him to kind of think maybe this week, maybe he's in a red non-contact jersey today. We'll find out here, guys. They do practice at 12:30 today, so maybe he's in a red non-contact. But otherwise, honestly, they're getting healthier. I mean, look at the injury report. There's a lot of names. But not anybody who's DNP of a walkthrough yesterday. Let's, you know, get that, you know, out of the way because it was obviously it's not a normal practice. This week might not be a good week for the, oh my God, they're so injured, fire the entire training staff crowd. Because this is what happens in an NFL season. You have weeks where you're more injured. You have weeks where you're less injured. It's professional football. It looks like they're getting healthier.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Sal, enjoy practice. We'll talk again later.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. I'm going to take a quick time out here, but coming up at 11 o'clock, we're going to get more of a look at what exactly the Bills are getting in Amari Cooper and what the Cleveland Browns are really up to, as we're going to hear from Spencer German of 92.3, the Fan over in Cleveland. That's coming up at 11 o'clock. We're still, of course, taking calls, 803-0550, the number to call. Talking a lot of Sabres there in that first segment. Had a lot of fun doing that. A lot of stuff to get off of our chests. Love to bring that back up as well. Zach Jones, Josh Mitten here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
They still have their reset. Into Phoebus. 8 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter of game 3. 4 seconds. Ionescu will heave. Sabrina Ionescu with the biggest shot in Liberty history.
A lot of fun last night in the WNBA. Didn't get to see any of the game, obviously, we were watching the Sabres game, but saw the ending. Iconic shots left and right. That's the thing about basketball I do love, those iconic shots to end games.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a lot of fun. Got coming up next here, we've got Spencer German of 92.3 The Fan. Get a little bit more of an idea on Amari Cooper. Should be a lot of fun. I mean, Cleveland, though, I can't imagine covering that team has been a blast. We'll see what he has to say coming up after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We'll be right back.
It's uncharted territory for me. The one time I did get traded mid-season, you know, the Cowboys, they had a bye week that same week, so I kind of had a lot of time to prepare, to know the system, and things of that nature. So this is definitely new for me. at the end of the day, it's just football, you know. I think I'm a pretty cerebral guy, at least cerebral enough to learn the playbook as fast as I can, so I can go out there and get lined up and just run routes, catch the ball, get open, you know, compete in the run game.
There is Buffalo Bills' newest wide receiver, Amari Cooper. Drove in from Cleveland yesterday, was at Bills practice, or at least he was in the building. I don't know if he had necessarily practiced, but then spoke with the media, calling himself a cerebral wide receiver. Josh, I love that he did bring up the point, though, that when he was traded the last time, because that was a very successful trade, mm-hmm. even in the moment,
right.
of just how good he was with the Cowboys. They did have a bye week in between, and it did help.
And I do wonder, though, like how quickly... And this goes for not just him, but for any player. Like, how quickly does it actually happen to integrate into a system
mm-hmm.
in all professional sports?
It depends on the system, too. I mean, Adams going right. with, you know, Nathaniel Hackett again, Aaron Rodgers again. Like, they've already said he's starting on Sunday.
Right. Where well, and the Bills. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. I mean, he's going with not only his old offensive coordinator, but also the quarterback he played and was most successful with. So, for that one, it really makes sense that he can go in there right away and just kind of succeed. Mm-hmm. Or not succeed, but just perform and play right away. But... I mean, in my opinion, I don't know if this is the case because, you know, sports are weird, but you'd think that if you just get in there and just get going, mm-hmm. it'd be easier. But then again, certain systems...
Professional sports, it may not be true.
Certain systems might be more complicated than others. So, and we don't know that with Brady's system compared mm-hmm. to it is Ken Dorsey. Yeah.
Yeah. Going to get more, though, on Amari Cooper here as we go to the Wester Hotline as Spencer German of 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland joins the show. Spencer, man, good morning. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, guys. How about you? How's everybody enjoying their new wide receiver out there?
Well, it does help, Spencer, that they won the night before and moved to 4-2. Because I'm not gonna like I think the trade would have worked and people would have been excited, but 3-3, that's a little bit of a bitter taste in the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine for you guys too. Like, it had to feel pretty good because not only did you just beat the Jets, but they then go make the move for Devontae Adams and then. One day later, the Bills kind of respond again. So it's kind of like, oh, you thought you were going to get the better of us. But instead, you know, we went and made a move too. So, I feel like it all kind of – it's been a good week for the Buffalo Bills, that's for sure.
It's been a lot of fun. For Cleveland, though, I mean, what are they losing with Cooper? I know he's led most of their statistical categories as a wide receiver, but a big thing that's been being brought up this week has been the drops. I think it's 8 or 9. He leads the league. Has that been because it's been kind of up and down? Like, has it been Cooper himself, Deshaun Watson at quarterback? Has it been a mix of stuff? What have you seen?
Yeah, I think it is kind of a mix of things. I think first and foremost, to answer your question directly, what they're losing, I do think that the Browns are losing a fringe or borderline, you know, top 10 wide receiver in the NFL. Like when he's playing at his best, when he's healthy. When he's catching the football, he is that guy. In terms of like how things transpired this year, I think you can go back to this off season. He wanted an extension. He's looking around, seeing some guys getting paid, and I think he understood where he was at. Like he's a wide receiver entering his age 30 season this year, and you know I don't think he necessarily thought he was going to get like Justin Jefferson money, but I think he still wanted to get an extension, have some security, feel like. You know, he was valued, and the Browns kind of balked at that. And the only thing they did was restructure the 1 year left of his deal and, you know, got him in the door for training camp. But then he's floated in trade rumors with Brandon Ayuk, and I think that kind of rubbed in the wrong way. So then I think he kind of gets to the season. And I want to be clear because I don't think it's like he became like a locker room cancer or anything like that. That is not Amari's style. He even said when he sort of held out during veteran minicamp as kind of like the one statement he made that he doesn't like doing that and that's not really what he wants to do. So I don't think it's that at all. I think it was more so just like him feeling like he maybe wasn't valued here and kind of understanding the writing was on the wall. So maybe he wasn't as bought in with Cleveland as he was in previous years. Because of just the circumstances that were around him. But I do think like a fresh start is a good thing for him. Everywhere else he's gone where he's gotten a fresh start, he's played really, really well. I mean, here in Cleveland, he's the only receiver in franchise history to put up back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Like that says a lot about the Browns organization, but it also says a lot about Amari Cooper and how good of a player that he is. So, I just think like it was kind of the best situation for the team to send him somewhere where he could play with, you know, more of kind of a clear headspace. And I think that you guys are getting one of the best receivers in football when he's kind of focused on that.
So, Spencer, I was looking at, you know, the last few years of him in Cleveland with all the different quarterbacks he's caught passes from. I mean, Jacoby Brissett, Deshaun Watson, Joe Flacco, P.J. Walker, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and even Jeff Driscoll's in there. I don't know if he got passes from all those guys, but they were all in as quarterbacks at one point. And, you know, then you look at this season, because in the past 2 years he's been a plus 1,000-yard receiver. And then you look at this year with the drops and the questions on offense for the Browns as a whole. And is this just the Deshaun Watson effect, or what was, you know, causing that kind of stagnation there? Is it a offense as a whole thing, or what is that?
I think it's a little bit of what I alluded to with the last question, where it was, you know, I think some of it was like he just maybe wasn't in the right headspace. And he even mentioned a couple weeks back, like, he felt like I guess this was like after week two, he felt like he hadn't necessarily been practicing like he normally does to prepare for games, and how he was going to change that about the way he approached practice. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing that he gave us earlier this season. But I think that was part of it. And I do think the offense played a role in this as well. I mean, I don't think it's not insignificant that you can go back, and I kind of laughed about this on Tuesday when the trade went down. There was a video of Amari Cooper last year when Joe Flacco was here. And, I mean, that was this whirlwind that everyone was just kind of wrapped up in here in Cleveland. Fans were loving every second of the Joe Flacco experience and the run that the team was going on to the playoffs and all that. And Flacco won that Nickelodeon MVP award thing or whatever it was, like the MVP or whatever they call it. And there's a video, you can find it, that the team posted where he's on camera and he's dumping slime over Joe Flacco's head. And he's like laughing, having a good time, loving. Like, there's something to be said for the fact that, like, in the offense they were running, which is more Kevin Stefanski's West Coast style offense, he was thriving. Whether it was Flacco, whether it was some of these other quarterbacks that were, you know, coming in and always counted on Cooper as kind of like their go to guy in a pinch, he was playing some of his best football of his career, and he was playing really well with those guys. So I do think there's something to be said for the fact that, like, yeah, I don't know that him and Deshaun were ever really on the same page. There were some moments last year. There were some really good games. There were some plays I remember, like a deep pass against the Titans game a couple early in the season where he, like, dropped a really nice ball into Amari. So, like, there's moments, but it just never seemed like it clicked between them, even though they would probably both tell you that they did get pretty close from, like, a personal level. I just don't know that the system and what they were trying to do, like, worked with those two.
I remember when Flacco went in last year, all of a sudden David Njoku became like the best fantasy tight end for like a 4 or 5 week period. I mean, like, it felt like really that Cleveland had discovered something with Flacco, and that, I mean, now we're going on it to like a 3 year run here with the Colts too. Josh Downs all of a sudden really, really good. But Spencer, you brought up something on the offense. Excuse me.
No, I was just going to say Njoku basically made the Pro Bowl because of the late season stretch with Flacco. Like, he was nowhere near making the Pro Bowl before that, and then when Flacco came in, that was the reason he made it. So I was just going to throw that in, but go ahead. Sorry.
On the offense, though, it's been something I've been looking at. I help produce our afternoon show, and we do power rankings in it in reverse AFC power rankings, and I Cleveland comes up quite often very early, but it's something I've been like looking at, too, of just their offensive numbers. And like I know we all like to poke fun at Deshaun Watson, but like, This feels like a very talented group of skill position players around him, and yet the only time they've scored above 20 points so far this year, Spencer, was the third preseason game, and even the first two they scored under 15. It just, I'm just, again, outside looking in, it feels like it's all on Watson. I feel like it can't, though. Like, they're not even scoring 20 points.
Yeah, I'll be fair to Deshaun Watson because it is the easy, and you know, we talk about this a lot in this town because, you know, people are over the Deshaun Watson experience, obviously, for plenty of reasons. I mean, from the day he got here, people were already over the experience. But he's part of the problem. I think that's fair to say. But it isn't all on Deshaun at this point, like why the offense has been so bad. I think some of it comes down to just like the system that they're running isn't Kevin Stefanski's system. And so I don't know that he's like as comfortable with like everything that they're doing and calling the plays and figuring out like what's going to work and, you know, using the personnel that they have along those lines. Like, the offensive line has really struggled. And this is an offensive line that, again, along, in Kevin Stefanski's system, which is a lot of gap run scheme and all these different things, like they generally have been one of the best offensive lines in football, and now they're running a lot more like outside zone and those types of things. And I think it's maybe we're seeing that this offensive line isn't equipped for that, or they just don't have the players for that, or maybe they just got old really quickly. But the offensive line struggled in pass protection. They're not picking up blitzes well. There's some miscommunications every single game on that front. And that's part of like what's been exposed about them. And then you throw in the fact, like you were talking about with Amari Cooper, like guys are dropping passes. And that wasn't just Amari either. He might lead the league, but like Jerry Judy's dropped some passes. David Njoku, when he's played, he's dropped a couple passes. So it's kind of been a widespread thing. The offense as a whole is pretty anemic. And I think a lot of people equate that to just Deshaun, and there's certainly reasons why he's not helping the cause, but it isn't all on him.
So one piece that personally I think is missing for this Browns team is Nick Chubb. I mean, obviously that injury is really bad, and you know you hope he can come back soon. But what's the buzz around him lately? It sounds like he might be kind of on his way back, but is there any hope that he's going to be back this week, or is it a little further down the road?
Yeah. So the expectation is he'll be back this week. That was reported leading into the Eagles game this past weekend that he was coming back, and then yesterday he dropped this really emotional, like charged letter to the fans at the Players Tribune, where he, was just talking about how much he loves Cleveland and how the fan support is like really what got him through his rehab. And he did have a moment where he maybe thought he wasn't going to play ever again. So the expectation is that he'll be back out there this weekend. Big game after a 3-game road trip. You're coming back home. It's going to be something to energize the fan base for a 1-5 team. In some ways, it feels kind of wrong that he's getting trotted out there. It's kind of like this shield from the organization's problems right now. But on the other hand, it is something that I think the fan base needs. It's something to get excited about with Nick Chubb. I don't know that he just fixes everything. If they were running Kevin Stefanski's system, like, holy, I'd probably feel better about that maybe being the case, because when he's thrived in Kevin Stefanski's system. But because it's this new offense that's more built towards what Deshaun Watson does well, I don't know that I'm expecting Nick Chubb to get like 25 carries a game and, go for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns and save this season from the I guess going down the toilet like it already kind of is.
On the Western Hotline, Spencer German of 92.3, the Fan over in Cleveland. Spencer, last thing for me here, you've brought him up a lot, Kevin Stefanski, the head coach, 2-time coach of the year. But it also kind of feels like his seat might be one of the hottest in the NFL, just again as an outside looking in. Is that sort of the sense you're getting, or is this more kind of like it's an ugly season, we're going to get through it, but he's still going to be the coach going forward?
Whew, that's a very layered question, because or a loaded question rather, because like it's funny, like you look around the league, generally when there's like a standoff, and I don't mean a standoff in the sense that like Kevin and Deshaun Watson like don't get along. I just mean like a standoff like inside an organization between a quarterback and a coach, and you have to pick one or the other. Normally the quarterback's going to win because teams just invest too much in that position. And we know what the Browns have invested at this point in Deshaun Watson. They traded the 3 first round picks. They've now, they obviously spent a lot of money on him, the $230 million guaranteed. And now they've spent a lot of time on Deshaun Watson. So I do think like, the Haslams, this ownership group, like they want to do everything in their power to prove that this was the right move for them to make, that they made the right decision in bringing Deshaun here. And so that, I think, at least makes the question you're asking one that's timely and certainly worth asking, because generally when that's the case, like the coach is the person on the hot seat. What I think is interesting, though, is like they just signed him and Andrew Berry to contract extensions this summer. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Like those don't count against the cap. You can move on from them, whatever. It's just money for the owner. But like I'd be hard-pressed to feel that they would completely just like abandon Kevin Stefanski like that and put this all on him. I think there does need to be some soul searching, though, that goes on the rest of the season. Like if the rest of the season becomes about figuring out if Deshaun Watson is salvageable whatsoever, then by the end of the season, you need to know what you're going to do. Are you moving on from the head coach? Are you, sticking with the quarterback? And if your plan is maybe draft a quarterback, like, well, what are you going to do? Because, and I think that in the end, like, cooler heads will prevail and there'll be a little bit of soul searching, and they're just going to have to admit at some point, like, maybe we got this one wrong and we got to bite the bullet and do what we can to work around this albatross of a contract that we have on our books. So I don't think Kevin Stefanski is in danger. I think he's going to be the coach next year. And I think he'll be back. But I definitely understand, like, outside looking in, why it certainly seems that way, because, again, whenever these situations come up, quarterback and coach, and you're choosing one or the other, it's usually the coach that ends up being the thing that you move on from, because these teams just get so invested in proving themselves right about these quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be one of the most fascinating kind of storylines to follow the rest of this year. Spencer, man, thanks so much for jumping on with us. Enjoy the rest of your week, and hope to talk in soon.
Absolutely, man. Anytime. Always happy to do it with you guys. Appreciate you.
That was Spencer German of 92.3 The Fan over in Cleveland on the Western Hotline. And I do mean it, honestly. I think Cleveland is going to be one of the most fascinating teams to watch the rest of the year. They're 1-5. They're going nowhere. I mean, but they were a team last year. I mean, Josh, we remember talking about, we were joking about Flacco, but it was kind of this feeling going into the playoffs of, I don't want to play him.
Right, like, yeah, because he's on a roll. Like, he's on a get away from me.
You know, when we brought it up there, it wasn't just Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
David Njoku got to the, as Spencer brought up, he got to the Pro Bowl essentially off his late season run.
Mm-hmm.
They were a dangerous team that ultimately ran out of gas, you know, playing Houston.
Right.
And Houston
right.
kind of ran him out of the building. But now you're seeing this year, and as Spencer brought up too, that albatross of a contract with Deshaun Watson. It is interesting, though. I, for one, really did think they're going to put Kevin Stefanski out onto the flaming pyre and just be like, hey, he's the guy. He's the reason.
It's his fault.
And then they were going to go, you know, skip on over to Boston College and be like, hey, Bill O'Brien, the last time right. you were with Deshaun, it was awesome. How about you come to Cleveland? Lake Erie's wonderful this time of year, and we do this again.
Sure
it is. And a part of me still thinks it's going to be the way they go.
Yeah.
But hearing there where it's like, maybe not. Maybe they are really just going to try anything to make this work. Because as he brought Andrew Berry and Stefanski, contract extensions this year, they've paid Deshaun Watson. I would say, though, if I were the Haslams, number one, I'm not going for Watson, but that's neither here nor there. If I'm Haslam in this situation now, I'm picking the two-time coach of the year, the guy that's gotten less talented teams to the playoffs, over the quarterback who, look, I got a lot of bad PR from anyways, atrocious PR from, and he hasn't helped me even once. He has not once been able to get it to where people would forget about it because it's sports. And I'm not saying that's a right thing, but that is what happens. You were willingly going to pay most of that, all of it anyways. You were just going to do it over an extended period of time. Bite the bullet, do it now. That's where I'm at least on that situation. But as you're seeing now, they're somewhat kind of tearing down a little bit. Maybe they trade more guys, but at least up to this point, they're trading their leading receiver. And over the last 2 years, been one of the best playmakers in the NFL.
I mean, I look at their depth chart at receiver now, though, and it's like you have Jerry Jeudy, Elijah Moore, Cedric Tillman, and Jamari Thrash.
I need you to say Elijah Moore's name, though, with a little more gusto. That's my guy. He's not really anymore. But.
No. Back up. You led me wrong last fantasy football season and the one before that because, Elijah Moore, he's going to be so good. He's going to be so great.
He's
you were
guy.
A sleeper agent. Like you,
he's
you,
my guy.
You made me draft him both years, and then he ends up doing nothing for the Jets and for the Browns.
I blame Zach Wilson for most of that.
I blame Zach Jones for most of that.
It's also probably
listen,
fair.
But, like, I that's why, you know, I was talking to Spencer about Nick Chubb there because it's like if he comes back, sure, he's going to provide some excitement, but.
But it might be about it.
Yeah, what's he going to do? Like, he's just the guy that's coming back from injury for the third time in his career. And I really wish we could see, like, we had the what if conversation a few weeks ago.
Nick Chubb with no injuries.
Nick Chubb with no injuries and not in Cleveland.
Statistically.
Nick Chubb on literally any other team in the NFL. I would even put him on the Giants and think, yeah, he could be successful.
Cleveland, though, was working for him because their offensive line for almost all of his career was very good.
True.
No injuries. I mean, he was statistically one of the best running backs like in NFL history in terms of yards per carry and all that stuff.
And
yards
where
per
did
game.
That,
he was awesome.
Where did that get the Browns?
Well,
because the rest
time,
of the
well, no, that, that yeah. one year when they had they Baker to, Mayfield and
yeah,
they go to
they
the playoffs
against the Chiefs. Yeah,
it was it was Chubb in that defense.
So one
Baker
year
was just hanging out.
One year, and this is not a slight on Chubb. This is a slight on the Browns ruining a generational talent
at running back, which you can say about a lot of teams.
The Giants. Like I just brought up.
Giants, Saquon Barkley, Detroit, Barry Sanders.
Oh, yeah.
For most of his career, Chicago and Walter Payton.
All right. You're just proving my point. I'm trying to yell at Cleveland here. I want them to get it together because, like...
Adrian Peterson in Minnesota.
Stop it.
Really, any team that, like, values a running back over everything else,
no,
that
but
running back's career is like, oh, I mean, he was great. And then, like, I never saw him in January.
But I look at, like, you know, like what's going on in the NFC North. And those four teams are all getting good at the same time. And it's so fun. It's so cool. The AFC North probably should also be in that same conversation aside from Pittsburgh. I mean, Baltimore is good.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati, Joe Burrow is letting us all down. The Browns.
Joe Burrow
is
not letting us down. Joe Burrow's awesome. That team is atrocious.
Okay, the first 2 weeks, Joe Burrow was letting
us
down.
That's fair.
The Cleveland is Cleveland and Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh, but that division has so much deep-seated hate for each other that the rivalry games are great, but it doesn't matter because usually if you're against Baltimore, you're going to get blown out. If it's against Pittsburgh, you're just going to kick field goals all game. And Cincinnati, I mean, yeah, if Joe Burrow's on, Cincinnati's also going to blow you out. The only good game you get is Baltimore-Cincinnati, and most of the time Baltimore handles them pretty easily. So I'm sorry. I have a lot of beef with the AFC North just because of the fact that they just can't get it together. They would have such a good
love that division
run of rivalries, but they can't seem to all get it together at the same time. It's usually one team out of the four is super good, and the rest are just in purgatory.
Sunday Night Football classics, AFC North rivalries. So good.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Jimmy on the line. Jimmy, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing fantastic, boys. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Good. I just want to talk about the Amari Cooper trade, and I agreed with you guys earlier. I really don't think we looked at Davante Adams at all. I mean, just like the deal we got, we basically got him for a bag of pucks, if you're talking about hockey terms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And with the whole, I also want to talk about Bass. I mean, the fact that last year we saw the disaster in the playoffs, I don't understand why we didn't bring in a kicker to begin with on the practice squad in the beginning of the season. I mean, he's done this before. I just don't understand.
I think it was a feeling, though. Yeah. I think it was a feeling, though, Jimmy. Thanks for the call. I think it was the hope, because he had done it before, that it was going to come back. The confidence was going to come back. This team does trust their players, maybe to a detriment. I don't disagree with that. But they really do trust their players to find it. They did it with Gabe Davis a lot for two-ish years. They were hoping that that one playoff game against Kansas City was a sign that he was going to be the dude at the number two wide receiver, and it just didn't ultimately happen. I think for me, with the Davante Adams thing, though, too, is it really came down to the contract they were going to have to take on. I don't think Vegas was ever going to be willing to really take any of the contract. I think they wanted to be completely done with Davante Adams, like a bad ex. They wanted everything done and over with. They wanted that paperwork signed, and they wanted to say, Avita Zane, I'll see you never again. I think that's really what they wanted. And it's kind of what they got with the Jets. With the Bills, they were not going to get that. I am excited, though. And Sal brought it up when we were talking with him a little while ago. They have a lot of picks, and being on the Pat McAfee show specifically was very upfront about, like, hey, we've always been all in, which, take that at face value. I'm not sure about it, but he kind of openly said, like, you know, we've got time before the trade deadline and we might still get active. I know a lot of people have brought up the need for a safety. I don't disagree with that at all. I'd like to see more from Cole Bishop, and Taylor Rapp had a very good game on Monday night, but really, up to this point, the safety positions has begged you for help.
Buda Baker, let's go.
Oh, man,
bring it on.
They'd have to take on so much money again.
I don't think that's actually possible, but that would be so good.
That'd be so good. I mean, but we've gotten people like calling up, going, like, where's Mike Edwards? Like, they signed him.
Right.
And where is
right.
he?
I was really excited for Mike Edwards, honestly. Yep. I wonder what's going on there. I don't know if it's an injury
I think there's a good chance. And I know Sal brings this up a lot, too, about, like, we don't see practices. I think there's a very good chance he has been worse than what we've seen from the actual safety positions in practice. Mm-hmm. That they're kind of like, all right, like, this is going to be the group that we have to try out.
Maybe that the injury was worse than expected.
It could have been worse, or just he's not fitting what they wanted at all.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
But yeah. I've also brought up edge rusher. I think the team is missing Von Miller, which, man, if you would have said this a year ago, that would be surprising. I think they are missing him on the outside. They were able to get some pressure to Aaron Rodgers. It should have been more. They're going to get him back, I think, in, what, 2-3 weeks? So we'll see about that, but I would love to see them add somebody. Not Hassan Reddick.
I was going to say, personally, I don't, but what do you feel about Hassan Reddick? I don't want Hassan Reddick, but I was just, I mean, he is
well,
kind
I,
of...
I actually, it would be tough because he's on the Jets. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I do wonder, though, now because we haven't actually been able to talk about any of this, but, like, he's... was fired by his agency. He didn't get a new agency. Mm-hmm. They walked
fired
away from
him.
Yeah, they walked away from him, and now he's with...
which is completely different than the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a massive question mark.
Yeah, it's notable.
Yeah.
You know, now he's with Drew Rosenhaus, which it feels like every NFL player is with Drew Rosenhaus, but whatever. I think there's a really good chance here that, like, he's just looking for, like, any team to give him, like, a one-year deal, kind of a prove-it contract, and then... Mm-hmm. do this again next offseason, because I think he has really missed the mark on how teams value him and such, and it has really bit him to the point now. I mean, he's losing a lot of money.
I think Detroit should go after him.
Detroit probably should. I know Max Crosby was out there a lot for him. Max Crosby is going to be a lot. Obviously, they lose Aiden Hutchinson. That's where I actually think Detroit will go with Hassan Reddick, because Max Crosby, I just don't see him leaving the Raiders ever. No. I think he even put out a statement on Instagram saying, like, I bleed, you know, silver and black, not silver and blue. And I was like, yeah, it's a Raider, baby.
All right.
I mean, to be fair, I look at Max Crosby and I'm like, he'd fit right in on those, like, 70s, 80s, like, Raiders teams where you're like,
yeah,
everyone,
but he also looks like
he's kind of a bully and a little bit of a crazy person. Like, that's Max Crosby.
But he also looks like him and Dan Campbell would be best friends.
Don't disagree on
like
that.
Those two would be crazy together. You think Dan Campbell's crazy?
That's why I like him and Aiden Hutchinson. That injury hurt. I watch a lot of football, but not necessarily like, you know, in that sense of like I'm deep into like the Detroit Lions lore. But him coming from Michigan, being that second overall pick, and being as good as he's been, and see that injury, and I'm like, oh, come on, like and especially in the blowout against. I mean, Dallas was in nowhere land, and that's going to hurt them. But Hassan Reddick would work. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to join the show. Talking a lot of Sabres there in the first hour, talking a lot of Bills here in the second hour. Love to hear your thoughts. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You're listening to WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
We were still all in. If this didn't happen, if Cleveland was not ready to do it, we were going to continue to monitor. And listen, we still got a few weeks for the deadline. If we feel there's something else that we need or can help us get over the top, we have been all in all along.
Buffalo Bills general manager Brandon Bean there on the Pat McAfee show. That was just about an hour or so before we actually spoke with the media. I do love when he does the Pat McAfee show. Bean, I think, is somebody that does want to be very honest with you when he's talking, but can't. Because of the nature of his job. And when he goes on McAfee, he jokes a little bit more. You even saw there, like, he's kind of like, you know, he's a little bit more laissez-faire in terms of the information he's going to give you. And you know, I think it's also GM speak, like, to let all the other GMs know, like, hey, you know, our phones are not turned off. They are charged. Like, we're ready to go.
Our phones, in fact, work.
But I think also reality, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills were willing to wheel and deal a little bit more. Sal's brought it up, and I know he's tweeted it out. They have potentially 10 draft picks coming up in this next draft. They're going to have more cap space open up in this next window as well. So
that's the hardest part right now. That's probably, I mean, they talked about it. That's probably why this was labeled a transition year. It's how little cap space they have kind of limits what they can do in season.
Yep, and it's like, all right, we have the team now. This is what we're going to work with now. But ultimately, they go 4-2, had some clear weaknesses that they could figure out. I mean, the Amari Cooper thing sort of falls in their lap. Mm-hmm. Our last caller, too, brought up. I mean, they get him for, you know, a bag of pucks. I fully agree with that analogy.
Right.
Because you're paying him $800,000 and
less than that.
Yeah, a little bit less than that. And ultimately, it's a third-round pick in which you have two twos and potentially three fours in next year's draft. So you're sitting there going like, okay, we're fine. We're still going to take the exact same amount of players.
Oh, no,
if
it,
we
it,
want
it,
to.
It is $800,000. You were right. I thought it was less than that, but still.
But so, like, ultimately, like, and they're sitting there going, cool, and he adds exactly what we need. And I don't think this should be ignored. Everything I've heard from Amari Cooper speaking yesterday and everything I've heard from his teammates, he potentially fits more in the locker room of what the Bills want than maybe Diggs did at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know if he fits on field as well as Diggs did, although, you know, talking with Sal before the season even started, I kind of had the question of, does current Diggs fit what the Bills want to do? I think Amari Cooper fits closer to that. We'll find out. I think, though, a really big thing is he maybe fits the personality far more for the Bills.
Right,
now,
like the vibes of just like super,
the vibes.
Not necessarily chill, but like just, okay, it might sound weird and cliche, but togetherness.
Togetherness, like, maybe not nearly as intense as Diggs,
right.
Which
you
I don't
want
to say it's a bad, yeah, and I don't want to say it's a bad thing,
right?
But you can see that maybe drove some teammates insane.
Right, because you want intensity, and you see the intensity from a lot of guys, mm-hmm. including like Josh Allen.
And he was a captain, so like the team
right.
did respect him,
right.
obviously.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, like you see Allen get intense all the time. Look what he did to the celebration after getting that first down against the Jets,
oh, yeah.
at the end of the game. It's like, these guys are intense, but Diggs is that next level, which, mm-hmm. like you said, is not a bad thing, but it's, if most of your team is not like that, it can be kind of tough. And it is tough to like put those players into certain locker rooms, because if you have a full locker room of all of those guys and they just get mad at each other the whole time, you know, because if you're all, you know, jacked up and intense, it can lead to other problems. But
I think, too, that there's maybe an argument to be had that the Bills were wound up too tight.
Yeah, everyone's
that,
so
that past
just,
postseason failures and stuff like yeah. that really did kind of just wear at the team, and this is why age two playing into it, but also was a good year for the transition of, okay, these guys
calm down a little.
Yeah,
bit.
These guys didn't get it done. We'll do this now.
It's another comparison mm-hmm. to the Maple Leafs.
Yeah,
like I remember we came up with that last year, and you know maybe even a couple years ago, but you know. The Great. Toronto Maple Leafs and the Bills can be very similar in terms of talent and success and everything in that sense of you know, just not being able to get it done in the postseason, but being great in the regular season.
Yeah.
That feeling is just, it's there for both teams. And, you know, we haven't really seen the Leafs take this step of like, okay, let's back off and like, you know, no expectations. Let's just go out there and play. The Bills are doing that this year. That's kind of what this year in transition was supposed mm-hmm. to be. And so far, it's worked out okay. And now they have a player that kind of fits that exact vibe of, yeah, there's no real expectations. Just go out there and do your thing.
Yep. I'm very, very excited to see what he can do. And I am keeping my expectations tempered, especially for this Sunday. I think mm-hmm. at best he's going to be in a limited role. That limited role, though, again, could be one of those things of like, hey, I know you don't know the playbook, but like you're going to run a slant here. You're going to run across.
Right.
You know, what have you.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if he just gets like two plays and scores a touchdown? Like,
he's got that ability.
Could you imagine he goes in there and just tears it up in
he
like
he has got that
snaps.
Ability. He really does. Like I could see something though where it's just like, hey, you're gonna run a streak here. And just like I'm gonna send it up.
One target, 65 yards, touchdown. Like, could you could you imagine? Like, I think the excitement's also there because you know that he's that field stretching type that they haven't had this year, mm-hmm. and I think we're all realizing, you know, take your opinion on Diggs as you will, whether you liked him, whether you didn't like him, you're glad he's gone, you're sad he's gone. We all kind of miss those big plays that he used to be able to make.
I am so glad. And Allen has to hit these. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm going to make sure to reiterate this point so people don't think I'm being easy on him. He has got to hit some of these deep throws.
Yeah.
But I am glad it's not Mac Hollins trying to right. it's expected now. Mac Hollins is not going to be the guy tracking these passes. Because, mm-hmm. man, and Jeremy and Joe brought up the stat today, too, of just how many targets he had compared to catches. And it is upsetting.
What wasn't it, like 17 targets?
Yeah.
Something like that, and only 7 catches?
Yeah.
A catch a game is not great.
And he is having, like, his, in terms of success rate, his worst year of his career. And that's, again, you know, I'm texting my buddy now, too, because he goes, all right, hear me out. What about Zay Jones or Darius Slayton? Like, and add another guy? And I told him just straight up, I'm like, honestly, dude, whatever means that, like, Mac Hollins can go to a more, like, Mac Hollins role.
Right, because if he had 7 catches.
Whatever that is.
If he had 7 catches through 7 games and only, like, 10 targets.
You're happy.
That's kind of what you're expecting him to be.
But right now, it's 19 targets to 7 catches.
19.
It's his worst catch percentage at 36.8 in terms of success. I want to see, can I find it here? Or I cannot. But I mean, the catch percentage, though, was 36.8. But this is something I was bringing up, though, over their two losses, where he had 12 targets and was, I think, leading the team at the time in targets and had 3 catches. I'm like, this can't be happening. This is why your offense is going into a shell. You've got a guy who, at best, is a wide receiver 4, but you really like him. He gives kind of like he's got the size stuff. We've seen in the red zone. He's got 2 touchdowns. Like, that hasn't been really a problem. But in terms of being the field stretcher, in terms of being a guy that can lead your team in targets on a given day, it's not good by any stretch of the imagination. And then it kind of went down against New York. He only had 2. 1 catch, it ultimately is a touchdown. This can put him more in that role of, I think his best day was against Arizona in the first week, where he had 2 targets, 2 catches, 25 yards, and a touchdown. That is maybe the perfect bit for Mac Hollins. He's not being targeted a ton, but when he is, he's able to catch it. They're not putting him in a role he's not used for or not used to or not even good at, and they can get more out of it. That, to me, is my favorite bit of the Amari Cooper thing. I think it allows everyone to go into roles they're more comfortable or more suited to. I've used the phrasing of just move everyone down a peg, and it's going to be what it is. Keon Coleman now doesn't have to run every single snap outside. He can be used as a slot because everybody that was covering the draft said, yeah, I mean, he might be able to develop into an outside wide receiver.
He's just a big slot.
But he's going to start his career out as a big slot. And to be fair, looking back, you know, alarm bells should have been going off. And I think it was for some people, me not so much. But alarm bells should have been going off that when Brandon Bean spoke, like, immediately after the draft, he said, oh, he's going to be an X. Like, I mean, that was a little, like, looking back now, it's a little concerning. He's a guy that is coming around, but much more slowly than I think they were hoping for.
Well, and I wonder too, like, if this is the case where he gets pushed inside now and he's just more of a slot player, I think that might be better for, if in the future, if they want to use him as an X, this right here could be, hey, get your feet under you, go catch the ball, get some receptions, just get used to the NFL game, and then we'll try you outside next year, or we'll sprinkle you in towards the end of the season or something like that. Like, because not only is he just have time and the expectations are off, you can just go do what you're used to doing. Right? Like, that's what he used to do in college, is what he can do now in the NFL, potentially.
Yeah.
And he can also learn from a guy like Amari Cooper. He's 30 years old. He's been in the league for 10 years.
And one of the best route runners in the sport.
Right.
His separation stats, I saw Jeremy tweet this out or retweet it, is the best of his career up to this point.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing, too, that, like, if you can start, because you're a huge advocate for this. I am, too, but you're very vocal on it because you're a draft nerd. If they could start drafting younger players and then utilize that cap to keep a guy like Amari Cooper around and have him not only be a part of the team, but also just be a mentor to these young players coming in.
And never let the cupboard get dry or empty
or
anything.
Right, exactly. But a guy like Amari Cooper who can have the same sort of style as Diggs, but be a lot less intense and a lot more, you know, open to things, if that's the sense, in terms of, doesn't come off as intimidating, because that intense style can come off as intimidating if you're a rookie coming into the NFL, and
it can wear on you too. I mean,
right,
it could just...
exactly. So I'm just looking at it in the long term of if you get a guy like Cooper, or you keep Cooper around and have him here with younger players, even Shakir can benefit.
Mm-hmm.
He's not necessarily a young player, but he's only been here 2 years really, and
yeah,
you know, I look at the off field benefits too on top of what he can do on the field with Allen, you know, being able to stretch the field a little bit, or just take the attention away from guys.
Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Adam on the line. Adam, how are we doing today?
Bad guys. How are we doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Just wanted to pick your brain about what your projections are for what we're looking at for Cooper this weekend. I would expect him to be on the field quite a bit, as well as getting the ball thrown his way a lot. It seemed like our head coach, when asked about, you know, what to expect about him, was kind of downplaying it. And talking, you know, wanting to talk more about the guys that are already here. And that concerns me, because is this going to be one of these things where we kind of, like, ease them into the playbook and, you know, wait for this to evolve? Like, let's get it going now. This is football. At the end of the day, like, the route tree doesn't change regardless of what team you go to. Sure, the playbook is different. But just looking for your feedback in terms of what you guys think he's going to produce this weekend. Thanks.
Yeah. Adam, thanks for the call, man. I will say, though, on that point, because I think it has been brought up a lot, of McDermott being very quick to praise really anyone on the team. And that's why it was noticeable that him and Bean didn't do that for Bass. I think that was a big part. Sal brought it up as well of being very honest in his assessment of Bass. I think that's just their style. They want to make sure that like they never really step in it. McDermott has been somebody that has done so before, and so I think he is being very careful to not do so again. I will say though, Amari Cooper was also pretty quick to kind of not, you know, say I'm being shelved this week or anything like that, but he made sure to bring up that like, well, you know, last time this go around I was trading in season, there was a bye week, and then I was able to play. You know,
Bills bye week is until week 12.
Yeah, you get 5 days.
Yeah,
figure it out.
Hey, good luck.
Now, I think you're absolutely right to bring up that a route tree is a route tree, and you can kind of figure it out. I think that's how he's going to kind of be used though. Is like in the huddle, he's going to call a play and then look at Amari and go, okay, this is what you're doing.
Yeah, right. Because everyone else kind of knows what they're doing, or they should anyway. But I look at, you know, I brought it up earlier. He is coming from Ken Dorsey as the offensive coordinator, and I know Dorsey and Brady are different people, but
potentially the verbiage is the same.
The offense might be kind of similar or have similar notes. So you never know there with in terms of, you know, how coordinators operate. I mean, looking at this so far under Brady, it's a much different offense than Ken Dorsey was. I mean, Dorsey, it looked like, hey, just everyone run down the field and Allen's going to throw it to somebody. Like that's how it always felt. And that's why he's not the coordinator here anymore. And that's also why he doesn't call plays in Cleveland, I think. But I look at the two coordinators that were together here, and I wonder how much similarities there are. And
Adam Henry, the wide receiver coach, also a former coach for Cooper as well. That's is the big connection.
I didn't know that.
So that one should be good. I will say, though, in terms of just the production, I would love if he had this stat line. 8 targets, 5 catches, 58 yards, and a touchdown. That was his first game for Dallas after being traded from then the Oakland Raiders. If he gave me that in his first game with the Bills after 5 days, I'd be ecstatic.
If he gave me that next week...
Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
Insane.
That's a little over 10 yards per catch.
Mm-hmm.
Got me a touchdown, and the success rate was up.
Yeah,
don't drop a pass on your first game. I'd be happy. I'm not expecting a ton against Tennessee. Seattle is much more the game which is the following game is much more the one that I'm looking at. Of like, okay, this is when I want to see Amari Cooper 100% full go. He's now part of this, and we're moving forward. Also, real quick, want to bring this up on McDermott and Bean. They were both very excited to say that like this got done when it did compared to the Douglas trade, which was like at the deadline. And everyone, including Douglas, brought up how like really the rest of the season he was kind of just moving on instincts and vets telling him where to go. This will allow Cooper to actually be integrated into the offense, and then it's a go. And so I for me at least, it's alleviating some of my fears that I know Adam had there, where is McDermott just going to slow play this to the point where it's, why did we even do this? 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. You listen to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We have also, of course, been getting connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We have not brought up yet tonight. I mean, we do have a Sabres game tonight. It's in Columbus, 6 p.m. pregame, 7 p.m. puck drop. Again, it's part of their back-to-back road series. They're also on the road on Saturday in Chicago. That's going to be 8 p.m. puck drop. But we also have Thursday night football.
8 p.m.
Yeah. Ugh. No, thank goodness. Thank
what?
Goodness. Oh, good. Can't start at 7. I won't watch it. Texas, Georgia.
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to have that little buffer where it's like, okay, the first quarter in it. I'm going to jump over here. Okay, I'm going to go back.
Man.
I'm like here. I'm ready to go.
Thank God that game's on a Saturday rather than like on just a normal weekday.
It's going to be big. It's going to be college game day is going to be there.
Ooh.
I'm excited. I'm nervous, but I'm excited.
You think they're going to pick Texas or Georgia?
I don't know. You know, honestly, Georgia has built up such good credibility so quickly in college, and rightfully so, that I could see it happening. The problem is I keep seeing the point spread for Texas 2 weeks in a row now go up as the week goes on.
Yeah.
And, man, it is freaking me out. Like, I think it started as they were a 3-point favorite to open the week, and now as of today, I think they're a 5-point favorite, and I do think that is going to go up. Is freaking me out. They didn't even play that well against Oklahoma. Very clearly some rust for Quinn Ewers, and they killed them. I mean, just blew them out. It was never really a game after, like, 3 series. I'm very, very excited for the game. It's 1 versus 5. I was just thrilled Texas was able to still like be at number one after Oregon beat Ohio State. I fully thought Oregon's going one, Texas two, and to see Texas be one, I was like, let's go, baby. But yeah, I got that start at 7:30. Hockey game starting at 8, so I'll be able to successfully jump between the two of them. I will tell you though, no offense to the Sabres, I will bail if it's a close game for Texas Georgia,
even if the Sabres are winning.
Yeah. Hmm. I'm feeling national championship, Josh, which is uncharted territory for me.
No, that's right. That's right. That's fair.
That's going to do it for me and Josh today. Coming up next, after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. You're listening to WGR.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.